Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al. There's
always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's chicken.
Season 6, Episode 1 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon 1, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to a new season of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We are done talking about the NABBA Mr. Universe. That was our longest season ever. So now we're starting a new season, and we're going to start talking about the Mr. Olympia competition. And we are starting off with a series of interviews talking about the very first Mr. Olympia, Larry Scott, and his two Mr. Olympia wins in 1965 and 1966. So today we are going to be joined by our good friend Roger Schwab. And Roger, of course, was a head judge with the IFBB in the 1980s. And we've had him on the show, I think, two or three times already. He's a great source of information and a lot of experience. So in 1965, Roger was only 20 years old, and he traveled from his hometown of Philadelphia with a bunch of friends in a car, and they went to the Brooklyn Academy of Music to see the 1965 Mr. Olympia contest to see Larry Scott beat out Harold Poole. And they also saw the Mr. Universe and the Mr. America that night as well. So we're going to talk to Roger about his experience seeing that contest and his memories of that very first Mr. Olympia. So it's going to be really a really great conversation. And in the future, in the next few weeks, we're going to talk to Dave Mastorakis. And those of you who know your bodybuilding history know that Dave was a really great bodybuilder back in the 1970s. And he was a good friend of Mike Mentzer. And Dave was actually in that contest, in the Mr. America contest. And he was only, I think, 15 or 16 years old, and he was competing. So we're going to talk to Dave next week. And we've got an interview coming up with Jerry Branum, who is a great interview. Jerry was at the 1966 Mr. Olympia that Larry won the second time. And hopefully we're going to talk to John Balick. We might even get to talk to Ricky Wayne. Well, Ricky Wayne was one of the top bodybuilders in the 1960s and 70s. And there's a chance we might get to talk to him, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed for that. All right, I do want to mention we are, again, brought to you by Redcon One, and I really want to thank Aaron Singerman and Redcon One for always supporting the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I really do appreciate it, and they are behind us again for another season. So at Redcon One, everybody wants to be a champion. Everyone wants to be the best. And at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a six-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout Total War is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then after your workout, you can fuel your body with the revolutionary MRE. This is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and carb sources coming from sweet potatoes and oats. And it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. And now they also have the MRE bars. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And if you go on their website and order any products, please enter the discount code LEGENDS. That's LEGENDS. And you will get 15% discount off your order. And you will also let them know that you are listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So give Redcon One a try. They are a great supporter of the show. And I also want to mention we're brought to you again by Old School Labs. Thank you again, Old School Labs. They are my sponsor, and they continue to sponsor the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So I really do appreciate that. With so many supplements on the market, it can be hard to know which brand is the right one. And as a three-time Natural Mr. Universe and the first Natural Mr. Olympia winner, the quality of supplements and knowing what I'm taking is very important to me, which is why Old School Labs is giving you 12% off your purchase if you go to their website. So go to oldschoollabs.com and use the code LEGEND12 at your checkout, and you will get a good discount. And they have the new vintage brawn protein made from whole food sources like beef, eggs, and milk. Check that out, vintage brawn protein, and that is at oldschoollabs.com. All right, so today I was at the NPC IFBB Europa Games, which was out in Orlando, and I was out there at the Florida Alternative Medicine booth because they had a booth out there. So, of course, Florida Alternative Medicine is a big sponsor of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So I wanted to go out there and give them my support. And they had a really good crowd. It was a 2-day event. It was on Saturday and Sunday. I didn't make it out there yesterday, but I did go out there today on Sunday. And they had an MPC event that was very competitive, and they also had a few IFBB competitions, so that was fun. And I've been talking about this for a few weeks now, but it actually is finished. My new book, The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, is now finished. It'll be available on Amazon.com probably at the end of the week, because I ordered a copy for myself so I could proofread it and check it out and see it in printed form, make sure everything's okay. It looks good. I saw it on online. But I did want to get the book in my hands and check it out. So as soon as I get that, which will take about a week, I will approve it, and then it will be on sale. So I'm guessing probably about the last week in April, it should be available. So it's got all color pictures in there too, which is pretty cool. I included all these pictures of me from my competition days, because the first part of the book talks about my competitions from 1991 until 1998 when I won the Natural Olympia. So as a way of illustrating the competitions, I put in these pictures from that I took during those journeys from all those competitions, and also pictures I took in the gym when I was posing. And they had some really nice color pictures in there, so I didn't want to make them black and white, so I kept them color. And so the book is going to sell for about $24.50. It's a little bit more expensive because of the color pictures, but it's about 140 pages, I believe. And the second part of the book is a tell-all on what to do for a competition, whether it's a natural bodybuilding competition or a regular competition. And it gives all the information on training, nutrition, cardio, posing, shaving off your body hair, putting the tan on, everything. Everything you need to know, how to do the mandatory poses, everything. So it's going to be a really great book. I hope it sells well. I put a lot into it, so it should be a great book. So look for that again toward the end of the month. Now, I will let you guys know, and we'll also have it on the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com. We'll have it on there as well, so you can order from there, or you could order it off of Amazon. And my training is going good. I'm down to about 216 pounds now, so I'm about at the halfway point, because I started off at the beginning of the year. I was about 230, pretty bulked up, which means fat, but I did add a lot of muscle, so I'm looking pretty good. I'm in a really good shape. I've lost about 2.5 inches off my waist. I got to lose about another 2.5 inches. So I'm right about the halfway point, like I said. And I think I'll be around 200 pounds ripped by the time I get to around July 1st. So I'm going to schedule some photo shoots for myself in July and August. I'm going to go do a couple in Chicago, because I know there's some good photographers out there. Maybe one in Miami, and possibly one out in Palm Springs, California, with my friend Ian Citrin, who's a really good photographer out there. So that should be a good time. Got to have the goals to stay motivated. I hope you guys are doing well with your goals. And I also do want to mention, we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. So if you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. And they have very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few reasons to give them a call. So you can call their office out in Tampa, Florida at 813-922-8939. Or if you want to check them out online at their website is FLAlternativemeds.com. That's FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com. And again, if you want to call them directly, call them at 813-922-8939. Talk to Jeff. He is the owner, and he will set you up. All right. Are you ready for our new season? Here is our interview with Roger Schwab. He's going to take us down memory lane, and we're going to talk about the very first Mr. Olympia contest out in Brooklyn, New York, at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, where Larry Scott won his very first Mr. Olympia. So here's our interview with Roger Schwab. Enjoy. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And we are talking now about the history of the Mr. Olympia contest in season 6. And my very special guest is my friend Roger Schwab calling in. And Roger has been with us before. Roger was a head judge with the IFBB for many years. And he was also writer for Iron Man magazine. I used to read his articles all the time when he used to talk about the Mr. Olympia. But before all that, Roger was a fan of the sport, like many of us are, and he was actually at the very first Mr. Olympia in 1965 at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. So we are going to talk today about that very first Mr. Olympia. So welcome to the podcast again, Roger.
Thank you, John. I'm happy to be here.
All right, Roger. How old were you in 1965 when you saw that very first Olympia?
I was 20 years old.
20 years old, okay.
I had been interested in bodybuilding for several previous years. It was a typical kid who was very, very skinny, who wanted to get bigger and stronger to play football. And bodybuilding just kind of hit it with me. And I got interested really in 1962. My first year that I went to the Brooklyn Academy of Music to see the first of the really big IFBB shows in 1962, and happened to see Larry Scott. From the last row of the Brooklyn Academy of Music, I saw Larry Scott win the IFBB Mr. America, and I was off and running in my bodybuilding career.
You lived in New York, right, Roger?
No, I lived in Philadelphia, so I made the commute up to Brooklyn, which was a little bit more difficult in those days. But we had a group of us who were all in the bodybuilding together. You know, we're young and influenced easily, and Larry Scott was taking Blair's protein, you know, so we were all trying Blair's protein, and we went to see that 1962 Mr. America just to see Larry Scott, and I can tell you, he did not disappoint, nor did he for the next, through 1966, when we went every year subsequently to see him compete.
What was the Brooklyn Academy of Music like? Because I've read a lot of stories about, you know, that's where they used to hold all the early IFBB events. And from the pictures I saw in Joe Weider's magazine, it looked pretty wild. It just seemed like people were packed to the rafters. Was it really super crowded in there?
You know, in the early 60s, bodybuilding was becoming, you know, more of interest in what this cult or this young sport was really about. Mm-hmm. And the Brooklyn Academy of Music, it wasn't in the greatest areas of Brooklyn at the time, and before you would walk into the doors, it was interesting to see. Let's put it that way. But once you were inside, it reminded me of Columbus in the late 70s and early 80s. These people, the fans that were in there, were really, really interested in this sport, and they were excited, and they let. There was no competitors on stage having to bring their hands up and asking for applause.
Right.
These people wanted to give the applause, and it was loud, and it was quite deserved, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Right from the beginning, from 62, every year that I went there, but especially in 65 and 66, that place was packed. You couldn't get in there. When somebody said standing room only, they meant it for the Brooklyn Academy of Music back in those days.
So how big was the IFBB back then? Because I got started in bodybuilding in the late 70s in Chicago, and I remember that was all AAU. There was really no IFBB shows out there, and that was way before the MPC started. So what was the IFBB scene like in the early 60s?
The IFBB scene in the early 60s could be told in two places, New York and California.
Okay.
It seemed that the IFBB always had an inroad into New York City and Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and especially the West Coast. The bodybuilders of the, especially Larry Scott and Don Scott and Don Howorth, I know you remember all these names, and Chet Norton, these were the California guys. Now, there was an overseas contingent, especially from England.
Okay.
Earl Maynard, Rick Wayne, and also from the down in the Bahamas, there were some great bodybuilders like there was a guy named Rock Stonewall, Glenn Wells. These guys would come up, so there was definitely an international flavor. But I would say 80% of the contestants were either from New York or California, which the people in the audience didn't mind because if they were reading Muscle Builder and Mr. America magazine at the time, which were the two most look forward towards magazines each month, with the possible exception of Iron Man. That's who they were reading about. So they were coming to New York to see the guys who they were seeing in the magazines. And those contests, in that perspective, certainly did not disappoint.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think Joe Weider really changed the sport with how he promoted his stars, his bodybuilding stars in the magazines. And I think that's what really got the fans all excited. And he was probably the only one doing that, because Ironman was just covering all the contests and with a big emphasis on nutrition articles and training articles. But I think Weider was looking for, which he was really smart to do as far as marketing, he was marketing the different bodybuilders individually, and I think that's what created the fan base, right?
I think so. I think if you were looking for articles in a magazine that you could potentially learn from, you were looking at reading Perry Rader and Iron Man. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for, you know, the pictures of a California, just the beginnings of a California lifestyle and bodybuilders and, you know, and beautiful women, you're going to Muscle Builder and Mr. America magazine, because Weider was smart enough to know that to popularize bodybuilders from the West Coast. It was magnetic. And even though Weider was still in Union City, he had photographers on the West Coast, and
Right. Especially
Larry Scott. I mean, Larry Scott, you know, from the early 60s, and a guy, another guy named Don Scott, I think his name was, and Don Peters, a couple of other great ones. And then, of course, it was the beginning also of Dave Draper in Union City, New Jersey. So he had them both in the East Coast and the West Coast, and the IFBB was just building the momentum. But something was clearly happening, although the AAU contest, especially the Mr. America contest, the NABBA and Mr. Universe were the contests. Mm-hmm. The IFBB was making inroads, and after 1962, when Scott won the America, you could see that if you looked into the future, you could see that it was going to be the IFBB, I think.
So this was your first time seeing Larry Scott, and you were still a teenager in 1962. So what was you and your friends' impression when you saw him?
Larry Scott, you know, you had to go for this type of scene. I mean, you know, he's a West Coast guy with this real deep tan and, you know, bleached blonde hair, but, you know, just the type of physique that you really couldn't identify with it. Somebody once said Larry Scott was a 190 or 200 pound bodybuilder with arms for a guy who weighed 250. His arms were so big. And, you know, back then people didn't talk about muscle belly length and length of the tendons and length of the bicep, but his bicep went right, you know, there was no tendon visible between the elbow and the start of the bicep. I mean, his bicep went right down, you know, to the forearm. It was amazing. And his triceps were just as good. And you put that together with, you know, people overlooked that his muscularity of his back, his abs, and way overlooked were his legs, especially in 65 and 66. They were great legs, and his calves were too. I remember Mike Mentzer was with us in 65 and went backstage and told us afterwards that his calves were so sharp that they could cut glass. And that was Mike in 1965, you know, before Mike was ever, you know, right before that he, you know, before he really got heavily involved in the early 70s.
How old was Mike back then, in 65?
Mike was born in 40. So I think Mike was younger than I am. So I think Mike was a few years younger than I am, if I remember. He was from Effort, PA, so I knew him at a fairly young age. He would come to Philadelphia every so often, and eventually I trained him. I trained him for the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest that I trained with him throughout the whole 1970 scene. So I saw him from when he was just really getting great to when he realized his potential. But even back then, he had an eye for it, and he said Larry Scott is Mentzer thought that Scott was totally incredible. And I know that having talked to Reg Park earlier, Park thought the same thing. And he brought Scott to South Africa for one of his shows. He brought Bill Pearl also. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was Weider, you know, starting the Mr. Olympia thing, you know, trying to get a lot of these AAU guys involved in the IFBB. He was even talking about bringing, you know, John Grimmick, who was certainly not ready to leave York to come to an IFBB contest. But, you know, Weider was trying to poke his finger into the whole thing, and he started to ask Pearl and Reg Park and, you know, and John Grimmick to challenge them to be, you know, the Mr. Olympia contest. These guys weren't about ready to enter that at that stage of a fledgling, you know, organization that's just starting to get big, that some people might have thought, you know, that it was being ruled too heavy-handedly by the leaders. So,
yeah,
just my guess. These guys never did compete, although later in life, you know, Park became an IFBB judge with me and Bill Pearl also.
Yeah. So after 16,
and Grimmick would come to the contest years later also. So,
oh, really? Know. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you also saw the 63 Mr. Universe also at the Brooklyn Academy, right? And this one, Harold Poole beat out Larry Scott.
Well, as I mentioned to you previously, John, I was at the Zembo Mosque in Harrisburg in 1963 to see Vern Weaver win the AAU Mr. America, and Vern was in his best shape. But Vern at his best could not compete that night, in my opinion, with Harold Poole. And it was a riot after that contest. Poole was really upset about it, and he was young. He was only a teenager at the time. I think he was 19, but he was clearly the most muscular man. And you could see that Poole was going places. Mm-hmm. So Poole defected from the AAU in 1963 because when he lost to Vern Weaver, he probably figured to himself he was never going to win. I think Val Vasilev won the next year, and Poole had already defected to the IFBB. He came in 1963, and in my opinion, at least, I was at the contest. He won the Mr. Universe contest and beat Larry Scott. And in this opinion, it was a good decision. It was controversial because, you know, Scott will always have his favorites. But Harold Poole, I don't think in 1963 anybody had seen anything quite like Harold Poole.
So describe what Harold Poole looked like, because I think a lot of our younger listeners, they don't know who really Harold Poole was.
Harold Poole, I think, in my opinion, I think Harold Poole was the one who first mastered the most muscular pose.
Right.
And when he went into that pose, I mean, nobody could compete against him. And if there was a weak body part on Harold Poole, I never saw it. That's for sure. He was tremendously muscular. He would have won most muscular in any contest that he entered. And quite frankly, if anybody listened to the podcast, you should Google Harold Poole in 1963. He was and through 1966, actually, he was really at the top of his game. I think eventually he went into pro wrestling when he probably didn't find the monetary rewards great enough in bodybuilding, and he left the sport. But from 63 to 66, he was tremendously competitive and most muscular in any contest from top to bottom, just ripped. And
wow.
Big.
And he was 19 in 1963.
I think so. You could check me on that, but I think in 63, he was 19.
God, unbelievable. So tell me a little bit more about that AAU Mr. America. You said it was probably the most controversial show you ever saw, except for the 80 and 81 Olympia.
Yeah, and I wasn't in Australia in 80.
Yeah.
I was the head judge in 81 in probably the most controversial decision ever in the IFBB. I try to point this out that I was a non-voting judge, and I was up on stage putting the guys through their poses that night. But 63 in Harrisburg, you know, it was a different time, John. And I don't there had never been a black Mr. America. Mm-hmm. Chris Dickerson was the first one in 1970,
right,
if I'm not mistaken. But Harold Poole, as far, you know, back in those days, I think they placated people when they gave them the most muscular award, and many times it was really the most muscular guy should have been Mr. America. So I think they gave Harold Poole most muscular man, and they gave Vern Weaver Mr. America. Now, don't get me wrong. Vern Weaver was really good. I mean, he was, you know, he was smooth compared to Poole, but, you know, tremendous, tremendous physique.
Mm-hmm.
I remember before that contest, I had a chance to talk to Vern Weaver, and I said, you know, I've seen you compete before, but you really look great tonight. And I said, you know, what are you doing? He said, I eat, sleep, and train. That's what he did. Unfortunately, a couple of years later, he had an untimely demise. But in 1963, he was great, and he knew it. But when Poole came out, if you could get a chance to see back in one of the old magazines in that at that time and compare the two physiques, it was really a symmetrical, great physique compared to a physique years ahead of its time.
Wow, you said people were throwing chairs at the
Yeah, I got to say that we were right in the middle of it. A buddy who obviously just scaled out at the end of the contest, Harold Poole, you know, and then people started saying that, and it really could have become something really ugly, and it almost did, but I think smarter heads prevailed, and we walked out of there, but it was a very controversial decision.
Wow, that's crazy.
In a mosque, no less. But
oh, really?
Great night. It was a great night, though. It was unforgettable.
So then,
you weren't going to forget Harold Poole's name after 1963. I'll tell you that.
Wow. So and then he went over to the universe then in the IFBB, and then he beat out Larry Scott that same year,
which was very strange because I thought he would defect to the IFBB and enter the Mr. America contest, which he just lost. But I guess the IFBB wanted to promote Scott versus Poole to sell tickets. And they did because the place was packed and Poole beat him. It was a little bit peculiar because the next year Scott went back and won the Universe in 64 and Poole came back and won the America in 64. So I think it was the first and only time that somebody won the Mr. Universe contest before they won the Mr. America contest.
Right.
But, you know, in retrospect, who cared? You know, people didn't care and it was what it was. And Poole was now full-fledged IFBB, at least for that time.
Now, how did Larry look in those years in like 62, 63, 64 compared to how he looked in 65?
Scott looked great from the beginning, but he eventually in 65, I would say, looked 10 to 15 pounds heavier and sharper. So something was going on, John. I know those years, what was going on was really I think these bodybuilders were really learning how to prepare themselves, let's say, for contests.
Mm-hmm.
I think drugs became more prevalent then, but Scott definitely looked like, I don't think his training was changing, and I'm not so sure it was Rio H. Blair's protein, but whatever you want to give credit to, Larry Scott in 1965 was at that time the most incredible physique I think this country had seen.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring out. The steroids and were probably coming
and
around.
The charisma about Larry Scott in 1965. Anybody who was at that show in 1965 saw a contest as far as the way that bodybuilders were accepted like they had never seen before. I mean, it was pandemonium and positivity, and there was nobody who was no booing or anything like that. People just really respected what they were seeing. 1965 was a quantum leap from 1962, 63, and 64 as far as the quality of the competitors. I mean, 65, all of a sudden you had Dave Draper, who was really come into his own. Chet Yorton, who they in 65 in the Mr. America contest, was Draper and Yorton, and I will tell you, it was really a battle of big, you know, strong guys who both of them looked fantastic. Draper edged out Yorton. I had my notes back at the time. I had Yorton over Draper, but Yorton came back the following year to win that Mr. America contest. And they had a Mr. Universe contest which preceded the Mr. Olympia where I think Earl Maynard won with a really good physique, but I remember writing down that I thought Rick Wayne should have won that contest. But, you know, Maynard was quite a bit taller than Rick Wayne was. And believe it or not, Frank Zane was in that contest in 1965, not looking at all like the Frank Zane of 1977, 78, 79, and 80, by the way.
Yeah.
But he was, you could see that this guy was going to be great. You know, people talk about, you know, Zane was not as big as some of the other guys later on, but don't kid yourself. Zane was a mesomorph. Zane had full muscle bellies from his legs, upper body, everything. But he just, when he came into the late 70s, even the early 70s, if you look at his pictures from NABBA, he was tremendous in the early 70s. But this is when he was really first starting to be great. And I think he won his class, or he might have come in second in his class. I think he won his class. I think he was in the medium class. And Earl Maynard won the tall class, and Ricky Wayne won the short class, and they gave it to Earl Maynard. And then after that, in 65, they had, after that contest, and Mr. Olympia was the last contest in the evening, and Earl Maynard and Poole and Scott were in the contest. And
well, it's interesting what you said about how 62, 63, and 64 kind of all led up to 65, but then 65, which was the year that the Weeders decided to start the Mr. Olympia, that was the year when it all sort of came together and they had high quality competitors. And I should mention also, when we were talking about the Mr. Olympia in 1965, it wasn't just the Mr. Olympia. It was, like you said, they had the Mr. America, the Mr. Universe. They even had a Miss Americana, which I guess was the advent or the beginning of what the bikini shows would be. And then they had the Mr. Olympia. So it was a full-blown night. I mean, it probably went on all night, right?
I would say that contest, the IFBB realized its prominence in 1965. I think bodybuilding changed in 1965.
Wow.
I think United States bodybuilding came into its own in 65. I think that Mr. Olympia contest, I think it changed everything. And I'm proved correct even to 2018.
Yeah.
Right. There is no Mr. American anymore.
Yeah.
There is no real Mr. Universe except for NABBA, which I always respected.
Mm-hmm.
But there is Mr. Olympian. Now that's the contest.
Yeah.
But back then, of course, in 65, 66, actually through, I guess, 1970 almost, there was very few competitors. In some years, there's only one competitor, I think.
Yeah.
But then again, it changed in 72, because in 72, that was another giant leap forward. 65 started it, and 72 in Essen, Germany, I think, took it to the next level, because then I think you had the greatest. I mean, you had Nubre and Arnold and Sergio in Essen, Germany, competing. And then in 73, it went back to New York, and that's where Arnold, you know, that was the real rise of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
In 73 and especially 74. And then when they went to South Africa in 75, then it was an international thing then. And that's when Pumping Iron was made. So then that was the golden age. I mean, I think what we're talking about right now was the beginning of the golden age of bodybuilding.
Right.
And I think in my opinion, the golden age of bodybuilding died in 1981, probably.
Yeah. And you, like you said earlier,
that's one man's opinion. You know, that's just
right,
my opinion.
Right.
And I'm old enough that I saw it, and some people, you know, would have an honest disagreement with that.
And like you said, too, earlier, you said that Weider tried to get, like, Bill Curl and Reg Park and even John Gremick. He tried to get all those guys into the Mr. Olympia. And in the end, they only ended up having three competitors because a lot of, like Pearl and Park, they didn't want to come over to Weider yet.
Exactly right. And I think that later on, after he retired, you know, he worked out something with Weider. Because I was with Bill when he was a judge at the IFBB, and he was a great – well, Bill, nobody disliked Bill Pearl. He was just
right.
a great man. And he, you know, he was an AAU guy, and he was a loyal guy. And he stayed with the AAU until basically the AAU became irrelevant. And then he went over, and he judged contests. But he always, you know, he's just – he's a paramount guy. He was great in total integrity of everything that he did. And I can say the same thing about Reg Park, because I judged with both of them. I knew them both personally. And this is what bodybuilding, these are what real men, real great, great men, you know, no attitude, just great, way transcended bodybuilders. They were just really great men. And I would throw John Grimmick in there with them. I was fortunate enough to be friendly with these men for a lifetime. So
yeah.
Wonderful.
Well, let's before we talk about the Mr. Olympia of 1965, let's mention some of those other competitors in those other contests, because they had the Mr. America contest, the IFBB Mr. America, and yet, like you said, Dave Draper really came into his own that night, and he beat a really muscular Chet Yorton in the tall class, so that had to be a really good showdown, huh?
Yeah, well, you seem to remember better than I do. I think they were both in the tall class. They were
tall class.
Because Yorton, Yorton, you had to see, you know, pitchers didn't do him justice. When you had to see, I mean, he was a very, he gave the look of a very, like, not to quite the extent of Chuck Sipes, who was really almost the epitome of a rock hard, muscular, tough man, you know.
Rugged, yeah.
Rugged is exactly the word. Yorton was pretty close to it. Okay. Whereas Draper just had this beautiful physique. But you could tell in 65, Draper won. Yorton had the most complete physique. Draper won because of the promise that he showed. And
okay.
In my opinion, he realized totally his potential in NABBA in 1970 in the Mr. Universe contest when he competed against Park and Arnold. And in my opinion, he could have won that contest. That's how good Draper was in 1970.
Wow, really?
But in this night, he was just realizing his potential. Although in my notes, I had Yorton. Those were the two. Those two stood out that night. As far I don't remember much else, except I do remember it was the first time I saw Szabo Kazuski, and he was really worth it. What a great guy! First of all, he was quintessential California bodybuilder.
Right.
I mean, you know, he was easy to identify with. He had narrow shoulders, but you know, really muscular and lean. I don't think Szabo could have weighed more than 170, 175. Mm-hmm. And they said he did all these abs, this ab work every day. It sure looked like it, because his abs were the best of the night, no doubt about it. But that was Szabo, because everybody was talking, you know, about Szabo, and he got a great applause when he came out that night, if I remember correctly. He didn't win the contest. I don't know what he placed, but he was great, and I remember him.
Yeah, Szabo got third place in a medium class, and he won best abdominals. But yeah, I always remembered Szabo in the magazines too. He was like, he had that cool look. He always had the sunglasses, and those stories about him doing like hours on the Roman chair sit-ups were legendary, you know.
Exactly. And you know, the only one I remember that wasn't—I don't think Don Howarth was there that year, but he eventually came. I think he won it a couple years later. And
yeah,
he was another great physique. He wasn't there that year.
How old was Dave Draper that year?
Gee, I don't know. I think Draper's now in his late 60s, so I really don't know. You could find that one out. I guess he's probably close to my age, because in 1965, if he was entering that good and I was 20, then he must be in his 70s, because he certainly wasn't younger than I am. So I guess Draper's a little older today than I thought he was, but he's probably in his early 70s.
Yeah, I thought he looked like he was like in his early 20s back then, because he looked like a kid, you know.
And again, one of the standouts in the next contest was Rick Wayne, because
let's talk about that.
You just had to see Rick Wayne's upper body to believe it. I mean, lower body was always good, a little blocky. He was short, but arms, you know, bicep and tricep, tremendously long muscle bellies in both his bicep and tricep. Was come all the way down into the elbow. His abs were sharp. He wasn't wide at all, but he was just a very muscular, great, great physique.
When I got into bodybuilding in the late 70s, he was more of a writer, but I remember looking at pictures of him when he was competing, and I was like, wow, he had an incredible physique for back then.
Incredible, and I would say that he was probably at his best in the late 60s.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, he was awfully good. And again, then I think Frank Zane was in that contest also.
Rick won the short class and Frank won the medium.
Oh, but he the potential was always there, and he was getting there. And that's what I remember that night before the Olympia contest. And then it was basically Poole and Scott. And it was a tight one, but Scott deserved to win that. There's no way they weren't going to give it to Larry Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he walked out, that place went nuts for a long period of time. It wasn't just a brief applause. It was a loud applause that lasted for a long period of time, and he won that contest, and justifiably so. He was ready, and that was Mr. Olympia, and I think they gave him some silly crown to put on his head. but it was a great culmination of a great show and deserving winner for the Mr. Olympia, although Harold Poole was right there with him.
Let me take you back to that universe, the IFBB universe that night. You said you thought Rick Wayne deserved it because he won the short class and Frank Zane won the medium, and Earl Menard won the tall class, and they gave it to Earl Menard, who was from England. How did Frank Zane look at that show, Roger? I mean, he didn't look like he was as ripped as he was later in the late 70s. He did have the symmetry, right? He basically had the foundation of his physique that would win Mr. Olympia later on.
I can't add anything more to what you just said. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
He wasn't sharp. He wasn't the chemist at the time. He was just a symmetrical, muscular physique with great legs, which were overshadowed later in his career because everybody would talk about his torso.
Mm-hmm.
But you could see he was going to be great, but he was smoother. He was just not quite as muscular, but he was young. You know, he was young then. I think, again, he's 2 years older than me, so he couldn't have been more than 22 at the time.
Wow.
And he was just coming into his own with a world of promise, which he realized, I think he won that contest 3 years later in 1968. I think Yorton won it the next year, and then I think Don Howorth won it, and then Frank Zane won it.
Yeah, you mentioned his legs. They did have body part awards back then, and Frank Zane won best legs, and Ricky Wayne won the best arms, and Earl Menard, who was the overall winner, he won best chest, but the most muscular award went to Rock Stonewall, and I remember Rock's name because he was before my time, but I remember he was from Chicago where I grew up. And he had one of the best names for a bodybuilder, right? Rock Stonewall. You can't get a better name than that.
He had a great name and a very muscular physique.
Mm-hmm.
He was great. He was a great physique. If he won most muscular that night, I would say that it was between him and Ricky Wayne. And he must have deserved it because Wayne was awfully muscular.
Yeah. But you said Earl Menard, you didn't think deserved to win the universe. You thought Rick Wayne should have got it, huh?
I did, but, you know, I think I was in the minority of opinion also. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Earl Maynard because I know Rick Wayne, who I got friendly with later on, respected Earl Maynard, and I think that Rick Wayne didn't seem to be, well, I don't know. I don't remember that long ago, but I don't think he showed any upset winning his class. I think he deserved to win the whole show, but you know, it could have gone anyway, and either way, and it went to the taller guy, you know, which usually it does.
Yeah. So then Earl ends up going into the Mr. Olympia. So this may surprise some of our younger listeners who are used to seeing the Mr. Olympia today, but at the very first Mr. Olympia in 1965, they only had three competitors. And like you said, it was going to be a showdown between Larry Scott and, Harold Poole, but they also got Earl Maynard to go into it too. And one thing I was reading is some article from Iron Man that was talking about the contest, and they said they actually did a coin flip to decide who would go out first. And Harold Poole went out posing first, Earl Maynard went out second, and then, as it turns out, Larry Scott got the flip to go last, and then that probably really helped him with his win at night.
He didn't need any help to win that night. You'd never seen anything like Larry Scott that night. I want to tell you, it was like, I think I saw a Muscle Builder magazine. It was like the guy had a vat of blonde hair, you know, that he could stick his head into this blonde bleach, and his head came out, and he was perfectly blonde with this real dark tan. And I mean, you would never forget it that night. I mean, I remember the master of ceremonies. I don't remember his name, but it may have been Bud Parker. But he says from Studio City or wherever Larry Scott was from, and he delayed saying his name, and the anticipation of the crowd became louder and louder, and all of a sudden this guy looked like a bronze god walks out on stage.
Right.
And that was Larry Scott. And boy, as soon as his name was announced, he was the winner of that contest. That's just the way it goes, you know.
Yeah.
Host
yeah.
played on Harold Poole. Harold Poole was still the most muscular man in the world that night, but he was not Larry Scott. Nobody could have beat Larry Scott that night, in my opinion. I'm not so sure a young Arnold Schwarzenegger couldn't have beaten Larry Scott that night, but the Arnold Schwarzenegger of 1974.
Yeah.
Would have beaten Scott that night, but there's not too many more who would have beaten him before the 1980s, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it really was a great first Mr. Olympia, because Larry Scott really set it up to have a Mr. Olympia winner who not only had a great physique and he had those unbelievable arms, but he really had the charisma. And it was something, he brought something special to the stage. I've read so many articles about the 1965 Mr. Olympia, and they just said the crowd reaction, the noise level in the auditorium that night was equivalent to like the Beatles in the 1960s. You know, it was just insane. And I've read these articles from people who have been going to contests for 40 years, and they said they never saw anything like it before or since, you know, since that night.
As somebody who went to see the Beatles at Shea Stadium in 1964, I would imagine I can verify that the applause that Larry Scott got that night in the Brooklyn Academy of Music certainly wasn't equivalent to Shea Stadium, but it was the greatest applause that a bodybuilder received at a contest, in my opinion, until potentially the late 1970s when it was in Columbus, Ohio, when those contests in 77, 78, and 79 probably realized the same dramatics as 1965. I mean, people were going crazy over bodybuilders in Columbus, Ohio in the late 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in 65, you almost had to be there, and fortunately, I was. So,
Right. Yeah, it's amazing when you are witness to something like that, that you never forget it. You know, I mean, how many years has it been now? 40, 50 years later, and you still remember it, and you can almost remember it like you were there yesterday, right?
Yeah, you know, you really had to have a passion for bodybuilding and the scene and the whole thing, and some of us did, you know, and it was just wonderful times. I have no regrets about being involved in the, as a fan, and then later participating in the IFBB and bodybuilding as a whole. And I always respected it. I always respected NABBA in London. I really thought that they did it tremendous. I think what would have rivaled it is if I happened to be in London, you know, in the 60s and 70s when NABBA was really in its heyday also. Mm-hmm. Just great contests, tremendous competitions. And you always remember, you always wonder which Americans would go over to England to compete in a NABBA contest. It was really exciting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when the IFBB came into full dominance, and, you know, NABBA, at least in this country, started to fade.
Mm-hmm.
Way it went, but it was there, and it was really, it was good times. And the magazines at the end of the month, you know, would tell what was going on, especially, you know, Iron Man would let you know what happened in NABBA if you weren't fortunate enough to get Health and Strength from England, which was a good magazine, and they always covered the contest more than anything else. So it was different on the continent than it was in the United States. On the continent, the magazines would always be result-driven. In the United States, it wasn't really, well, it was to me, but to most people, it was, you know, the articles or in muscle building, how these champs train, or Ironman, you know, all the real great articles about training in general. So It was good times. I mean, it was great. And 65 was really the kickoff of great bodybuilding in the United States as far as contests.
What was the atmosphere like, Roger, after the show was over and Larry Scott was awarded Mr. Olympia? Did you guys sort of hang out? You were all young. Did you hang out a little bit and just soak in the atmosphere after it was over?
Sure we did. But I wasn't, you know, I was young and I wasn't ready to start running backstage and see any of these guys. Mike Mentzer went backstage, though, and he reported to us, you know, and said that Scott's, you know, as I said to you, Scott, no, not only his upper body, but his lower body was just fantastic, and he was ready. I mean, Scott left nothing to be prepared. His posing was perfect. His physique was at his zenith, and he knew it, and the audience knew it, and it transcended right to the crowd. And so we hung around afterwards, and, you know, but that was it, you know. Then we took the long drive home to Philadelphia. But it was that way in 65, and then when we went back in 66 for the Olympia, you know, it's like we were old hands at this, and you knew our seats were better because we got tickets earlier, you know, and it was great. You know,
yeah.
Great years.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks again to Roger Schwab for joining us again for another great interview. And next week, we should be joined by Dave Mastorakis, who was actually competing in the 1965. He wasn't in the Mr. Olympia, but he was in the IFBB Mr. America, which was held that same night. So we're going to talk to Dave and get a firsthand account of what it was like to stand on the same stage as Larry Scott. That's going to be a great interview. So I want to thank again Florida Alternative Medicine, Redcon One, and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode and this season of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. And we will see you guys next week. Take care.